You here today, and know that the Lord has taken care of you this week. Starting next week, we plan on opening our schedule up, and so Sunday school will begin next Sunday. You need to perhaps be in contact with your Sunday school teachers, however, some of the classes may not be meeting, and so you probably need to make that connection. Children's ministries will be beginning next week as well. We'll do everything we can to keep your children safe. We'll be taking temperatures and we'll be cleaning toys like nobody's business. So we're gonna work at it. But we are wanting to get going. Sunday night and Wednesday night ministries will also continue starting next week. The only thing that will not be starting right away are meal ministries, and there's just an issue there that we want to put off for a while. It seems to be that would be an area that would be the hardest maybe to feel safe with. But we hope to see you Sunday school starting next week. Last week, I went to Ohio, and I did some preaching, and I was going up Highway 23, and I hit the Beltway going into Columbus, 270, about 10:15, and when I did, my phone sent out an alert reminding me that due to riots in Columbus, that there was a 10 o'clock curfew. And that's not on my mind. I'm from East Tennessee. I forgot that there are places under curfew. And that was simply another reminder that we live in a very chaotic world. We live in a world of rioting. We live in a world of COVID-19, a place where racism and sexism and lots of other isms are still a part of our reality. We live in a culture where Christian, Judeo-Christian values are really under wholesale attack. We live in an age of paganism. We live in an age that is leaving God as seemingly many ways in parts of our country as quick as they can. And for you and I who are believers, the question is does God have anything to say to us in this kind of age? Is there a word from the Lord for us this morning? When it seems like everything's getting tore up from the floor up, does God speak in days like this? And it seems to me that God does speak, and He speaks frequently to us in His Word. And this morning, I want to give you a word from the Lord for times like this, that is found in Psalm chapter 11. Seven short verses, let me read them to you. It's a word from David. He says, "In the Lord I take refuge. How then can you say to me, 'Flee like a bird to your mountain'? For look, the wicked bend their bows. They set their arrows against the strings to shoot from the shadows at the upright in heart." Verse 3, "When the foundations are being destroyed, what can the righteous do? But the Lord is in His holy temple. The Lord is on His heavenly throne. He observes the sons of men. His eyes examine them. The Lord examines the righteous, but the wicked are and those that love violence His soul hates. On the wicked He shall rain fiery coals and burning sulfur. A scorching wind will be their lot. For the Lord is righteous. He loves justice. Upright men will seek His face." Now, this passage in verses 1 and 2 are really quotations in verses 1 and 2. Here is King David, and he is in a very troubled time. In fact, again, in verse 1, they tell him, "Flee like a bird to the mountains." In verse 2, they say, "Listen, The wicked have their bows set against you. They are in hidden places. They're trying to assassinate you. And many believe that this is written during the time when Absalom, his son, rebelled against him. And when Absalom rebelled against him in the prime of his reign, Absalom took a majority of the nation with him. A majority of the people had turned against David. And it seemed like, again, the foundations of his life were very much being destroyed. And his advisors are saying to him, listen, everywhere there are assassins trying to kill you. And what that means is that there's really no one that David can trust. If he goes to the generals, he doesn't know which generals are on his side and are secretly working against him. If he calls his council, if he goes to other mighty men in the nation, he doesn't know who's with him and who's against him. When they put food in front of him, he doesn't know if it's poisoned or not. The foundations of his life are being destroyed. He doesn't know in his own household which servants, which children are going to side with Absalom and which are going to stay with him. The nation is falling apart. There's economic disaster because a civil war is impending. And so his advisors are looking at him and saying, David, the only thing that you can do is to do what you did when Saul was chasing you. You have to leave all this comfort. You've got to go back to the mountains. You ran from King Saul as public enemy number one for 10 years. David, you got to go back to the mountains again. You got to start all over because you can't trust anyone. It's all falling apart for you. But here's David. And out of this passage, David, this great man after God's own heart, finds a couple of truths that he's able to hold on to that you and I need to grab hold of this morning as well. The first truth is that in spite of it seeming like the foundations are being destroyed, that everything I hold dear is being uprooted, that there's no way back to where my life was before, David says in verse 4, but I'm not going to live like there is no God. The foundations are being destroyed, but God is still on the throne. He's still in his holy temple. He's still reigning, and the emphasis there is on is. The foundations are being destroyed, but in another reality, God is reigning. And I'm not going to live like God isn't reigning. God is sitting on his throne. He doesn't seem to be too worried. He's not standing up. He's not getting anxious. God is there. This hasn't taken him by surprise. He's not running to the wilderness. And because he's not running to the wilderness, I'm not running to the wilderness. God is on the throne. Again, he is. He is. I want to emphasize that because I want to contrast it in just a minute. He is on the throne, and that means there's hope in my situation. Remember when God calmed the storm and the disciples are going nuts on the boat and they're on the ocean, and the ocean was the ultimate fear of the ancient people. It was the uncontrolled space. It was the place where Satan reigned. It was a place of destruction. And in that situation, they cry out, and Jesus just says, peace be still. Peace be still. There's not a storm that comes up that when Jesus decides to calm it, he can just say, peace be still. There's nothing in my life that he can't say, peace be still to. Remember when he's at the tomb of Lazarus, and Lazarus has died, and there he stands with Martha. And he says to Martha, Lazarus will rise again. And Martha says, I know that he will rise at the end of time. And he says, no, you don't understand. I am the resurrection and the life. Lazarus, come forth. He is on the throne. He is right now. He's a right now kind of God. I like how he speaks to the woman who has five husbands, and the man she with is not her husband. And she talks about a lot of things, but he says, if you were to ask me, I would give you living water right now. I could do something for you right now. With all the stuff in your past, I can do something for you right now. We serve a God who is on the throne. And he can take a broken life, he can take a broken heart, and he is able to do something for you right now. He's a right now God. God can right now, if you were to ask him, invade your past and cleanse it and purify you and take all that junk in your past and put it in the sea of his forgetfulness and wipe it clean. It doesn't matter if there's an abortion back there. It doesn't matter what you've done and what you sold. It doesn't matter. God can help you. You might have broken up a marriage back there, but God can invade your past right now and cleanse you and give you a clean slate. He is a right now kind of God. He's able to do things. He's able to take a life that feels like nobody cares, and he's able to right now baptize you in his love and reassure you that he cares. He's able to take all your worry right now. If you give it to him, he says that he is able. If you will cast your burden on him, he is able to sustain you. I love Amos chapter 3, verse 12, where God says to the Jews living in Samaria, he says, although you're like a lamb in the mouth of a lion, and all that's left is part of an ear and two leg bones, I will restore you. God can do anything because he is on the throne. And David says, I'm not going to live like he's not on the throne. I'm not walking around. I'm not going back to that cave and hiding, because I serve a right now kind of God. But he says, secondly, I'm also, though, going to be patient. I'm going to live in the confidence that I know God is on the throne and he is for me. But I also have to be patient, because in verse 5 he says, or in verse 6 he says, pardon me, on the wicked he will rain fiery coals and burning sulfur. A scorching wind will be their lot. Now, what is he saying there? Well, that's a reference back to Sodom and Gomorrah, to the way that God totally destroyed those two cities. But notice again the contrast. God is on the throne, but God will bring vengeance. Right now, he reigns, but in the future, he will bring vengeance. Now, this is, again, reasserted throughout Scripture in Psalm 73:20. Asaph said that when he went into the temple, then he understood their end. God is going to bring vengeance. Romans chapter 12 says that vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. I will repay. So David is there in this gap, and he's saying, God is. God can do anything now. He might deliver me now. But there are a lot of things that God will do. Ultimately, justice will come. Now, the question is why the gap? If God is on the throne, why is he waiting to bring justice? Why is he allowing this scenario where it seems like the foundations are being destroyed? If God is on the throne, why is he up there and allowing me to go through all this stuff and waiting to bring justice at some point in the future? Because I got to live here in the middle, and why is he allowing the middle to come into my life? And the answer is in verses 4 and 5. Again, it says, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord is on his heavenly throne. He observes the sons of men. His eyes examine them. The Lord examines the righteous, but the wicked and those that love violence, his soul hates. He hates because he loves justice, verse 7. And if you love justice, you have to hate what is opposed to justice. But notice he says he will bring vengeance, but right now he's examining the righteous. He's testing our paths. He examines the righteous. His eyes observe the sons of men. What David seems to be saying here is that God is on the throne. He will bring justice, but he does allow chaos in the middle to examine you and I. Seems to be the flow of David's argument here, the flow of his thoughts. Now, why again is that? Because ultimately, again, we don't know our hearts, the Bible says. We don't know our hearts. And we won't know our hearts unless God reveals our hearts to us. And the way that he reveals our hearts to us is through allowing shaking to come into our lives. Look at Hebrews chapter 12, verse 25. This is a complicated structure here, but the previous verses are talking about how God spoke through adversity in the Old Testament. And it talks about how on Mount Sinai, how he literally came down and shook the mountain. But he says, see that you do not refuse him who speaks. Now, he's saying God is speaking. God is saying something to you. He says, for if they did not escape who refused him who spoke on earth, much more shall we not escape if we turn away from him who speaks in heaven. The contrast is that God spoke through Moses. Now he speaks through Jesus. And you need to hear what he says. But the question is, how does he speak? Verse 27 tells us how he speaks. Now this, yet once more, indicates the removal of those things that are being shaken, as of things that are made, that the things which cannot be shaken may remain. Now hold this one second. He says, God is speaking to you and I. And the way that he is speaking, grab the last part, is that he is shaking things. And he is shaking everything so that the things that cannot be shaken will remain and be clear to you and I. Now get that contrast again. God is speaking to you and I right now. In the middle, he's reigning. Vengeance is coming. In the middle, he is shaking everything that can be shaken to test us so that we know whether we have put our life and hope in things that are ultimately going to be destroyed in the end. That's why God, again, is allowing that. You and I need to be tested because we can't grow without testing, because we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what we don't have. We don't know what we have not achieved yet without testing in our lives. You just don't know unless you've been shaken up a little bit where you stand. I mean, there are tests throughout life. One of the tests that Levi and Will and these guys are finding is that marriage is a test, right? I mean, you can believe a lot of things about yourself, but you ain't been married yet. You don't know that. You may walk around and say, I'm an easygoing person. Well, you haven't had to share a bathroom with anybody yet. You don't know if you're easygoing or not. You may say, well, I can get along with anybody in this world. There's nobody I can't get along with. Well, you haven't been married yet. You don't know that. You don't know that. You wake up, she's there. You go to bed, she's there. You don't know who you can get along with. You say, well, I don't have personality tics. I don't have any annoying habits. Well, you haven't been married yet. You don't know if you got any annoying habits or not. You'll find out if you got some annoying habits. See, you have to get into a situation where you are tested before you know. You can walk around believing you're a wonderful Christian, but you haven't had kids yet. You don't know if you're a wonderful Christian or not. You come to church and the peace of God just overflows your heart and you're able to worship and it's so wonderful and you look around and don't understand why everybody doesn't feel God like you do. Well, you haven't tried to clothe 3 kids, stick them in a minivan while they're yelling, feeding them Pop-Tarts in the back, drop them off at nursery and run in here ragging and forgot you cut to comb your hair. You don't know. You haven't been tested yet. You know if you got the peace of God or not in your life. And you and I need to be tested. You know, it's very easy to believe that you are a very righteous, peace-loving person. It's very easy if you live in the suburbs to say, I don't understand why there's violence in places. Why are people so violent? But see, here's the thing about affluency. There's 2 or 3 advantages to having money. And as you grow and as you get more money. And one of those advantages is you get to control the kind of people that you're around. See, when you work in the factory, when you start out, you can't control the bozos who work around you. As you move up the ladder, you get to the point where, first of all, you get to hire and fire everybody around you. And if you don't want to talk to somebody, the secretary can tell them you're busy. You don't have to be around people that you don't like anymore. When you're poor, you might live in a large apartment building with thin walls, and you can't control who's around you. You might live in places, and all around you are people that you don't like, and you have to live there because you can't get out. As you get more money, you get a house. And to some degree, you can't control your neighbors, but you got enough money to build a big fence. You get enough money, you can buy you a lot of property and put a gate at the end and put a camera, and nobody's getting near you unless you let them near you. It seems very easy to believe that I'm an easygoing, I'm a well-adjusted person. But you don't have to spend your life around people you don't like. You haven't been tested. I got into Ohio, got into my hotel about 11:15 on Saturday at the Comfort Inn. And I got all my stuff put away, and I lay down. At about 11:30, I got to preach in the morning. And I didn't realize how thin the walls are at the Comfort Inn. And there's a couple about 6 inches from me having a good time. And the guy thinks everything's funny. And he laughs like Charlie Heater. Charlie Heater. And for an hour, everything's funny with Ohio Charlie on the other side of the wall. About 12:30, and I'm beat. There's silence, and I think, well, Ohio Charlie's had his fill. The little party's over now. About 12:45, I found out Ohio Charlie's also loud when he sleeps. Ohio Charlie's a snorer, and so Ohio Charlie became Chainsaw McGraw on the other side of the wall. And I got to bed at some point. I got to sleep at some point, but I didn't sleep much. And I woke up, they had the breakfast closed because of the COVID issue. But I woke up ready to find Ohio Charlie. It's like, where is this joker who kept me up all night? 6 feet, and it dawned on me, if I had to share an apartment next to Chainsaw McGraw, I'd have a criminal background too. See, you don't know. You don't know. You haven't been tested. And you've got to be shaken. You say, I've got lots of faith. Well, you haven't been through persecution yet. You don't know how much faith you got. You might be like Peter who said, Lord, if they all deny you, if they all leave you, I'll stand next to you. And Jesus has to look at him and say, Peter, before midnight, you'll deny me three times. You're talking like a man who hadn't been tested. You don't know that you'll do that, and you're not going to do that. You can say, well, I'm a really generous person. I love the Lord. I give to the kingdom. The kingdom is important to me. My heart's where God's heart is. Well, listen, the problem is all your money that you give is from the top. When you give money, it doesn't affect how you eat. It doesn't affect what kind of house you live in. You don't know if you'd give your two mites because you've never been down to your last two mites. You don't know. You say, well, I'm a loving person. I love everybody. I'm a forgiving person. And like C.S. Lewis says, it's easy to be a forgiving person when you don't have anything bad to forgive. And been there. You haven't been shaken yet. But the Bible says that we need to be shaken. We need to know what we're about. Rico Tice is a great English preacher. And he was a rugby player in college. And by his own admission, he's always been on the heavier side. But he's a great rugby player. And he said he went to, he was on a team, and they were practicing through the summer, getting ready for fall. And he said he didn't understand the coach because about the first practice, he ran them all till they couldn't run anymore. And then he was sort of ranking them to see who was the last man standing. And he said, given my situation, I was the second man to drop out. And then he said, then there was the body fat test. And they stripped them all down to their shorts. I don't know how they did it, but they tested who was the biggest of the lot. And he said, it was humiliating. And he said, I went to the coach and said, why are you doing this? And he said, Rico, you need to find out the truth about yourself while you can still do something about it. I don't need to go to the judgment thinking I'm something that I'm not. I don't need to stand before God someday thinking I have a lot of faith, but I've never been tested. I don't need to stand before God with the isms in my life, whether it's racism or sexism or all the other isms, and I've never been tested. I don't even know where my heart is. I don't need to stand before God thinking I've been a loving, committed person, but I've never been tested. I've never been shaken. I don't need to stand before God not knowing that I really spent my whole life in pursuit of power and recognition and status. And I stand before Him and I've got all these idols in my life that I've been serving and I've been doing a little stuff on Sunday morning. But my whole life has really been invested in this world. But I never got shaken, so I don't know where I stand. I need to find out. And so God is reigning. He's going to bring justice. It's all going to work out. But in the middle, God allows the chaos brought on by evil people to test the righteous people. There was an old illustration, maybe you've heard it, about the lumberjack. The lumberjack is going to cut down a lot of the trees in the forest. And when he goes into the forest, he sees a little bird building a nest in one of the trees he's going to cut down. And so he goes in there and he wears it out with an axe and he shakes the tree and the little bird gets whiplash and he moves to the next tree. But that tree's got to come down too. And the lumberjack goes in there and beats that tree, shakes it, gives the little bird whiplash, does it three or four times till the little bird finally builds this nest in the rocks that aren't coming down. And God is doing that in my life and in your life throughout the course of our years on earth. And thank God He is. We build our life with money here and then status over here, and then we get into this group and that group, and it becomes our life. And God, in His mercy, we don't understand it because we're getting whiplash. But God is taking the axe and he's bumping what we've built our lives on, because he knows that stuff's coming down in the end. We've got to build on a firm foundation. And some of you here have found out, and it's been painful. You've been shaken since I've known you in the last 4 or 5 years. But you found out what you've built on. And you've had turmoil in your family. Some of you have been through divorces. You've been through some very painful deaths. You've had to say goodbye to people that you thought you never could lose. You've had financial turmoil. Again, you've had meltdowns in your family. You've had disappointments that have happened to you in this church. You've been through so much, but you know what you found out? In the shaking, you're still here. You're still worshiping God. You're still standing. You're still glowing because God is still at work in your life. And what you have done is you have passed through the storm and you have found out that you never had, were built upon the sand. You have been built upon the rock, and the storm has come by and you're missing a shutter or two and you got some chipped paint and there might be some minor repair work, but you are standing, shaken, yes. Jerry Lee Lewis would say there has been a whole lot of shaking going on in your life, but you're still standing. And thank the Lord he's told you that. You know where your confidence is. You know what you've depended on. You know where your strength comes from. And that has made you a stronger person. And that has made you a person who is prepared to meet God at the judgment someday, because you know. Again, let me bring this together. He is reigning. Anytime he wants to, he can move. He can take you out of the situation, or he can cleanse you of the situation. Anytime he wants to, he can snap his fingers and he can take it all away. But in many cases, he's not doing it. He is, but there's a lot of things that he will do later on. You and I live in the middle when all things are being shaken. What can we do? We can act like there's a God. We don't need to say, where's God? Why has God allowed this? We can be confident people. We can say, there is a God and he is reigning. We can be patient because we know in the end justice is coming. But in the middle, we can take the shaking and look at verse 7 in conclusion. He says, for the Lord is righteous, he loves justice, and upright men will seek his face. Stand with me. We can be confident he is reigning. We can be patient, justice is coming. But as we're being shaken, as we're being tested, the Bible says we can seek his face. We can pray. We can worship. We can grow in our knowledge of him and know him as we are known. And that's what I want to give to you today, because some of you are shaken. We are all going to be shaken. Our nation is being shaken. But our lives will be shaken. And we need something that will sustain us in the shaking. And he says, seek his face. Get up near God. You're broken. You're hurt. Things are falling apart. The foundations of your life are being destroyed. Seek his face. Seek his face. In other words, build your nest in the rock that won't be shaken. Come to him. Pray. Allow him to strengthen you. Invest your life in him. Ask him to help you. Ask him to give you the strength to stand firm even in the midst of that storm. And he can help you to trust him. He can help you depend on Him. He can help you be a person of hope and confidence, even though the foundations are being rocked in your life. Why don't you seek Him today? You say, I'm hurting. I'm battered. I'm in the middle of the storm. I'm losing the shutters. The paint's getting chipped off of my life. Seek His face. Seek His face. You have a God who loves you, who you can depend upon. And He may not bring you out of the shaking, but if you're on Him, you are on a solid rock, you will survive the shaking. And you need to know if you're going to stand or not anyway. You need to find out in this life and not the next.